You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore. Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. We are in hour number three. Thanks for staying with us. I'm Dave Hodges, the host of the Common Sense Show, the show that is freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. We're brought to you by a number of sponsors this hour. I want to talk about two of them. One of them in particular, my good friend, Steve Quayle. And I absolutely love what Steve does. No pressure. He just simply wants to help people, and he knows what I know, that our fiat currency is one day going to collapse. And if you got the bulk of it in the bank, you're dead money, literally and figuratively. Steve will convert your soon-to-be worthless cash into precious metals. I'm not only a business partner of Steve, I'm a customer. And I'm a very satisfied customer, and you will be too. How do you get a hold of Steve to find out more about Renaissance Precious Metals and what he'll do for you? Give him a call, 406-586-4842. That's 406-586-4842. And as you know, we sell storable food. You need food, water, guns, gold, ammo, medicine as a minimum to get ready for your prepping. And I have been selling it for a long time in high volume quantities. And I kept having people write to me, say, Dave, I can't afford that much. And I said, okay, let me see what we can do. I went to the manufacturer and I said, we need a lower volume amount that I can sell. They said, how about 4 weeks? And I said, that's a good start. That'll get people through the initial part of a crisis and maybe act as a building block to add more later. So we got 4 weeks. They said $250. I said, come on, we can do better. And I got them down to $99. Now, this is only good as long as supplies last. So you're going to want to act on this. So here's how you get yours. You go to preparewithdave.com. Preparewithdave.com. You just put that into the URL. You don't need a coupon code. Simply go there and get the peace of mind that comes with knowing you're taking the first steps to take care of your family. Now, supplies are limited to two per day because we are strained right now to keep up with the demand, and we want to make sure everyone that wants that four-week supply is able to get that four-week supply. So you're limited to two per order per day. You can come back tomorrow and order more, but we would just want to make sure everyone has the availability. That is preparewithdave.com. Well, we've got a really terrific guest. He's no stranger to our audience, very popular with our audience, and whenever I run his articles that appear on his website to my website, boy, the results are really, really impressive. People really like Dane Wigington. They like the work that he does. He focuses on geoengineering, and we're going to kind of be all over the map tonight with what Dane is looking into. So, Dane, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could join us, and it's great to have you back.
Thanks for your continued voice with trying to sound the alarm on issues of immense importance. I would argue, Dave, mathematically, the most dire and immediate threat we face, short of nuclear cataclysm, that so many people are still not grasping the gravity of.
You know, I you're right. A lot of people don't get it, but people are waking up to the notion that everything isn't as it should be. One of the things I wanted to start you out with, and something that I've paid a fair amount of attention to, is Kilauea, Guatemala, seismic activity in the Philippines, along the Ring of Fire, but also there's rumblings in Yellowstone, as I'm finding out, with tectonic plate shifts. What's going on, and does this relate to the work that you do with geoengineering?
It directly relates for numerous reasons. We have components of climate engineering, like massively powerful radio frequency microwave transmitters, which are used to manipulate the atmosphere that's now been saturated with electrically conductive toxic heavy metal particles. These same installations can bounce their signals off the now reflective atmosphere and back down into the strata of the planet. What happens, Dave, when you microwave something long enough, if it's got water in the microwave oven, it blows up. And if you concentrate these transmitter signals in a common location in perhaps a seismically sensitive zone, and you heat the substrata, can you cause seismic activity? All available data says yes. As we see now with the fracking and the seismic activity that that has inarguably caused, was denied for how long, Dave? But now we know there's too much proof to back it up. So the same is true with the potential of these massively powerful microwave transmitters. And there's too many incidences that are very suspect in regard to, for example, twice in New Zealand we had U.S. representatives and John Kerry leaving literally hours before massive quakes hit. Big coincidence there. In fact, in one case for some very high-level meetings, the representatives were ushered out a day before the meetings were over, hours before a massive quake hit there. A lot of coincidences we should certainly question. Now, in addition to that, we have other factors that are also unquestionably a part of the equation. We have thermal expansion going on around the planet. The oceans are warming at astounding speed, and this thermal expansion causes seismic activity, volcanism, and so forth. Another factor we have, and this is something I'll be covering more in my broadcast later in this week as well on geoengineeringwatch.org, but we have many new volcanoes that have been discovered, for example, in Antarctica, more volcanism there. Now, this is where we have to keep the horse in front of the cart. Many have tried to claim or make the claim that it's the increased volcanism that's melting the ice. All available paleo data shows exactly the opposite. We have a lifting of the mass from the melting ice that reduces pressure on the landmass below and thus starts to regenerate volcanism. And so it's just simply important to understand what the science says and what the paleo data says, historical record. So we have, again, thermal expansion, glacial rebound, Dave. That's the term for when the weight, the mass of this ice is lost as it's melting and running into the sea. You have those land masses starting to pop up out of the water, quite literally. And some of the glacial rebound that's predicted for land masses like Greenland is truly astonishing. I mean, it's far beyond what people would imagine how far that land mass is predicted to pop out of the water. In fact, 1,000 feet or more at some point if that mass is lifted completely. So we're talking about massive geologic changes, a lot of different factors potentially affecting the equation.
That's a ton to digest. So let me break down a little bit of this for the layman. And basically, I was able to follow it. But let me go back to something you said, and then I have a follow-up question to that. Thermal expansion. You're talking about what the regeneration of these volcanoes because there's thermal expansion going on. What is the cause of the thermal expansion?
This is where we need to look at science, and I realize, again, the scientific community has not been honest in countless ways with the citizens they claim to represent. But the simple fact of the matter is the planet is warming right now, and this is I stress this every time I say this. It's not about Al Gore. None of us, or at least I'm not fond of Al Gore. He's a part of the problem. He's a part of the power structure. He owns stocks in the company he claims to represent. It's not about the disaster capitalists that are making money off the damaged climate. It's not about any of that. It's about reality. Planet's warming right now, and Dave, I encourage your listeners to look this up. Don't believe what I say. It's warming at the rate of 4 to 5, the thermal energy contained in 4 to 5 Hiroshima bombs per second. That's 400,000 per day. That's difficult to digest that the planet could be warming at that speed. But most of that heat has gone into the oceans. That's why we're seeing temperatures in some places in the Arctic, for example, ocean temperatures 25 degrees above the baseline. 25 degrees. It's incomprehensible. So that thermal expansion, when people look at our planet, Dave, many people have tried to convince themselves that the planet has some sort of magic thermostat that keeps it at a certain temperature no matter what we do to it, no matter how many forests we cut down, no matter how much of the planet we pave, no matter how much of the oceans we poison, that somehow it magically stays at a certain thermostat level, and that's simply not, it's not logical to think in those terms. If we, the reason that heat is retained here is because of the gases that hold the heat here. If we thicken that blanket, it's going to hold more heat. If we add geoengineering, and this is a very critical part of the equation where the climate science community is totally betraying the human race and the entire web of life, when we add climate engineering, that can and does deflect some of the daytime incoming thermal energy. It also traps that heat at night. It also destroys the ozone layer. It also helps to poison those forests, which I just mentioned, with the toxic elements that are in the precipitation and the fallout, making those forests become carbon sources instead of carbon sinks. So again, I am and will continue to be focused on climate engineering, but it's imperative that we not deny the fact that we have been horrific stewards of the planet. We've put perhaps 20 or 30 million years worth of stored hydrocarbon, took the planet that long to build it up. We put it in the atmosphere in the geologic blink of an eye. There are effects from what the human race has done. That's a simple fact of the matter. Geoengineering has prohibited the planet from responding, Dave, and that's what's so critical. Geoengineering has been a straitjacket that as the planet warms, there would have been more precipitation, carbon-laden precipitation, which would have stimulated much of the boreal forests or equatorial forests. That has not happened because the precipitation is, again, toxic. The root systems respond. We have peer-reviewed study to prove that, destroying the ozone layer, which is frying the trees from the top down, disrupted the hydrological cycle, causing droughts and floods. So, again, we have a massive wrench in the works, if you will, Dave, and that issue is climate engineering. And in addition to all this, Dave, and this is important for everybody to remember, it's contaminating. Climate engineering aerosol spraying operations are contaminating every single breath you and I and all your listeners take. These metals are highly toxic. They're synergistically toxic, which means when you combine the metals, they become exponentially more toxic, and they're bioaccumulative. They build up in our system. So this is a fight for life.
Wow. You just gave a couple chapters there to go through. I'm taking notes here as we go here because this is a complex topic. Let me ask you a real straightforward question. From your understanding of the science, how much does man contribute to CO2 compared to nature?
Well, let's look at the baseline that we had before the Industrial Revolution of about 280 ppm. And now we're at about 410. Mathematically speaking, let's look at what the statisticians have done on this equation, and they have. Of the mathematical statistical odds of the changes we see occurring not being anthropogenic, not being human caused, the statistical odds are a virtual zero. And your listeners can look this up, and this is the point. People talk about natural cycles. Yes, the planet has gone through many natural cycles. But is this in that category? And in that context, we have to compare, again, as an example I used often, if people die, that's natural. If you throw them off a cliff or throw them in front of a speeding semi, they're going to die a lot faster. So the changes we're seeing right now, statistically, and I hope by these statistics you can see I'm not shooting from the hip, it's happening conservatively 170 times faster than any previous paleo event on our planet. There is absolutely no question that human activity is the core causal factor for what's happening on our planet right now. And that human activity includes, at the top of the list, Dave, not the only part of the equation, but at the top of the list, climate engineering. The aspect that the entire whole of academia is denying. They're so committed to the lie, they can't turn back now. And yet, we will expose this issue one way or the other. And Dave, we have the entire environmentalist, so-called environmentalist community, also denying the single greatest environmentally destructive factor of all, climate engineering, because their 501c3 nonprofits depend on them denying the issue. And we look at who funds some of these environmental groups, Dave. Who do we find at the top of the ladder for contributions? And groups like Sierra Club, Rockefeller Foundation. What a surprise.
Yes.
They are controlling these groups. And at this point, Dave, I have absolutely zero respect for nearly the whole of the environmentalist community.
When we look at climate engineering, you're saying is the number one cause.
But not the only cause. It's imperative. If we look at a pie chart, we would have the single biggest slice being climate engineering. But I am not implying that by any means the other causes should be ignored or negated. They are also massive. We have destroyed...
Let's do this, though, Dean. Let's start with the biggest. And I want to break this down a little bit so I can understand what the climate engineering is coming from. And then we'll expand the list as we move down in descending order in terms of impact. But when we look at geoengineering, I think of things like chemtrails. What is the number one contributor to the geoengineering demise of our climate?
So many roads lead back to climate engineering that, although that would be difficult to really pin down on one issue, the saturation of the atmosphere with electrically conductive light scattering particles would mathematically likely be the single greatest destructive factor. But that in no way negates back to the microwave radio frequency transmissions we discussed earlier and their effect. And much of this is unquantifiable at this point. We are in truly uncharted territory. And Dave, for example, there are so many layers to this insanity. This is why it makes it difficult to pin it down on one issue. As we know, I'll give one example of that. As we know that the activity, the climate intervention programs with the atmospheric saturation of these particles, which destroy the ozone layer, for example, which are causing immense heating in certain areas like Siberia, the Arctic Ocean, that heating is releasing methane into the atmosphere. And I think we've talked about this on your program. Your listeners should look up Arctic or look up Siberia methane explosions or blowout holes. They'll see photographs of the tundra that look like some kind of massive war zone bomb craters. This is methane thawing and exploding into the atmosphere. It's happening right now. Now, leading back to your question, the layers of insanity. Another element in climate engineering that appears to be already fully deployed is Project Lucy and Project Alamo. Those are acronyms for programs to further microwave the atmosphere in a desperate and unimaginably destructive attempt to degrade the methane that's filling the atmosphere, much of it caused by climate engineering in the first place. So you understand the definition of insanity here, doing more of what they did in the first place that caused the problem. And we don't know the consequences of microwaving the atmosphere to try to molecularly degrade the methane. Why would they be so desperate to degrade the methane? Because back to what I brought up earlier in this show, methane that's thawing, exploding into the atmosphere, is covering the planet like a layer of glass. That's trapping much more heat than the atmosphere deflects. And we are, again, heading into what would be correctly termed an abrupt climate collapse. It's far worse than anything that's officially being disclosed at this time. Geoengineering is making it far worse, not better.
Where my suspicious mind goes next, Dane, is beyond the chemtrails and right to Project HARP, because your description of electrifying the ionosphere and these particles put me in the mindset of that. Is Project HARP part of this, and is it a major culprit?
HARP is an ionosphere heater, and that's one of the transmitters of which there are likely perhaps as many as 100 around the globe like HARP. So HARP is only one of many facilities. We have grids of RF microwave transmitters being put up everywhere we have industrialized society. When we see these big cell towers going up everywhere, these are being used for weather mod. We know this because we can see their signature on the precipitation and radar maps. So, and these facilities are being fed with 10 times more power than they need for cell phone repeating. They're absolutely a part of the grid. So the immensity of electrosmog that we're all swimming in is highly lethal. It's having a very profound health effect on us and the entire biosphere. So again, there's very many layers to climate engineering that, when we combine those layers and all the downstream effects, mathematically, there's no question it's the single most destructive human activity right now, greatest threat we face short of nuclear cataclysm.
So the RF part, and so 5G is just amping up that threat.
Even more, absolutely. 5G, we know its effect on water molecularly. We're made of water. 5G is used for crowd control. Whatever the ultimate overall agenda with the 5G, there is absolutely positively no question this sea of radio frequency transmissions that we're all swimming in at this point is highly lethal. And if 5G is implemented, we are truly in uncharted territory.
Well, I think we're in the, well, let me put it this way. Since 5G is linked, and I just did a show on this with Virginia Farber, but since 5G is linked to brain tumors, all kinds of cancers, and other health effects, this is a direct assassination attempt upon humanity. But I also see this as a slow burn process. Let me back up here. I'm going to choose the right words. Is this the terraforming of the planet for some other purpose? Is it designed to get rid of humans? I mean, how do you see this?
I would argue that there is no credible data to back up that conclusion. If we look at the whole process of climate engineering, weather modification, weather warfare, the historical chronological process, there is nothing here that we cannot attribute to humans behaving poorly, completely unrestrained, being led by clinically insane individuals at the top of the ladder. That's how we get here. Just like the detonation of the nuclear bombs initially, which they did not know what would happen. They didn't know. Yeah, they did it anyway.
Crazy.
Project Starfish, the detonation of hydrogen bombs in the magnetosphere, which is still causing known and unknown issues today, they did it because they could, because no one said they couldn't, because we have a population that, I'm sorry to say, still wants to continue with their personal paradigm at any cost. They don't want to be bothered with what's happening. They're told, Dave, we have in so many publications from academia the words could, may, might. I highlight this often because those words are used with in regard to the immensity of the threat we face. We see these completely misinformation type statements made in regard to the immediacy of what's unfolding. For example, we'll see scientific studies that say if the current trend of die-off occurs, we could have a problem with no insects in the year 2100. Let's look at what we know today, what we've said at Geoengineering Watch for nearly a decade. 80-90% of terrestrial insects are done. They're gone. And now we have peer-reviewed study to back that up. It's not off in 2100 somewhere. And when people see dates like that from the science community saying, gee, we could, we may, we might be in trouble someday. No, it's here. It's now. And people should stop for a moment and listen to what I just said. If the insects can't survive, how long do they think we will be here? And we've now lost, backed up with peer-reviewed study, what we stated at geoengineeringwatch.org for nearly a decade before we had that study, from our own studies with former Forest Service biologists, we've lost 80-90% of terrestrial insects. We will not be here long on this course.
I didn't know it was that high. I didn't know it was 80-90%.
Yes.
That is striking. Well, let's talk about corrective actions for what we've covered so far. One, we can get rid of the chemtrails. Two, would you recommend that we do away with cell phone and cell phone technology in mass use?
First, if I could back up and very respectfully point out to your listeners, if they want to gain traction on this issue, it's extremely important to consider the semantics. And we want to really, really avoid the chemtrails term because that leads straight to conspiracy theory and hoax. And Dave, did you see, in fact, in Arizona, did you see the hit pieces they did on, quote, chemtrails Kelly? Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. The bottom line is it's in the vernacular now. And I've heard weathermen openly talk about it on air in mainstream media.
I'm not saying it's not good for our own personal conversations, but I'm saying if you're dealing with an elected official or an agency, imperative to use the climate terms, because otherwise they will hand you a boilerplate page that says chemtrails aren't real, end of story, done. If you talk about geoengineering, climate engineering, solar radiation management, cloud albedo enhancement, they can't do that. They can't get away with that. Okay. So I'm just saying we're playing chess. We need to play it as well as we can. Not saying for personal conversations the term isn't descriptive. It is. It's fine for personal conversations, but I just wanted to point that out. If we look at – I'm sorry, the second part of your question, Dave, was I got caught off on that one.
Well, cloud enhancements. Okay, we'll call them that. Okay. I'd say other than normal contrails. That's what I first used to call them when I saw them because I said, that's not normal what I'm seeing up there in the sky, 1997. The other thing that I mentioned was should we consider limiting or eliminating the majority of cell phone use because
other technology. I'm sorry, yeah. You mentioned other technology. At the point we're at right now, is that possible? I mean, could we communicate effectively enough to deal with the even bigger issues we have to deal with, like stopping the ongoing atmospheric aerosol dispersions, if we didn't have any means of communicating, all of these forms of technology are harmful. They're doing damage. They affect every aspect of the web of life. It's like the cars, everything else that we all depend on for our day-to-day lives. Can we just walk away from them? I don't think that's going to happen. I think we both know that. But if we continue to go down this road, our time horizon is unimaginably short. And when I say that, people tend to think, what, we have a few centuries perhaps, or the end of this century. Mathematically speaking, no, we don't have anywhere near that much time. Look at the insect equation I just cited. Let's look at the mammal die-off, the wildlife die-off. We've lost 60+% of Earth's wildlife populations in the last 40 years. Marine ecosystems are absolutely collapsing. The food fish, if you will, Dave, we're there. Statistically right now, in the next weeks, months, we're going to see things that will start to alarm people because they can't be hidden any longer. And I want to stress this, Dave, the non-linear nature of what we face is very difficult for people to comprehend because they've been trained not to understand this. They've been trained to think that any large geologic changes would take millennia. Not true. It's unimaginably untrue. So what I'm stressing is that the current paradigm, including the cell phones you mentioned, is not sustainable. It's absolutely unsustainable. And I don't like that fact any more than anybody else does. But if we don't start dealing with, I would argue we should start with the biggest hole in the bottom of the boat. And that hole right now is every breath we take. Every breath we take is contaminated with climate engineering fallout. It's contaminating the soils we grow in, the waters we drink. That's our first and foremost priority, should be. If we can deal with that, if we can expose that, Dave, I would argue it will drag so many other issues to the surface with it. People will know that without their knowledge or their consent, they've been subjected to a grand and lethal experiment from which there is no return. And when I say there's no return, in regard to human health, these materials that are enter our body through the olfactory nerve in our nose, go into the bloodstream, accumulate in our system, you can't just get those materials out. It's made all of us sicker and less cognitively functional than we would have been, and that can't be changed. We can mitigate it to some degree with chelation and other forms of health protocol, but to us, the environment, that can't be changed. The environment as a whole, people think, Dave, that we can just stop doing certain things and everything will go back to normal. Not the case. The damage that's already been done, if we shut everything off right now, cell phones, climate engineering, and every other form of human activity, the likely equilibrium period that we face to have a planet that is remotely similar to the one we previously knew would be likely in the 10 to 20 million year range or longer. We will not know the planet we've known before. But Dave, I would argue this as well, and I'll give the mic back to you. If we can preserve any part of Earth's life support systems, is that not worth fighting for?
I agree. So you're almost talking about planetary triage. Save what you can.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
That's
a very good term.
That's
a very good term.
Yeah, it's a frightening aspect, Dane. This is you're painting a picture that's even more grim than when we've talked before. But listen, if 80 to 90% of the insects are gone, yeah, we live in an ecosystem that's interconnected. I mean, we can't think that we're immune to this.
We can't. And what I'm asking people to do is not to believe me. I repeat that again and again and again, because so many people, they'll form an opinion by, well, this person said this, that person said that. I'm not asking anybody to believe me. I want them to investigate the statistics I'm talking about on their own. And the amount of bluefin tuna, let's give some more statistics, 98% depleted. Global pelagic fish populations, 90% depleted and dying at an even faster rate than ever before. Plankton, no plankton, no people. Want to make that clear. Plankton populations down likely 60% or more. Plankton, the single greatest source of oxygen production on the planet. Global atmospheric oxygen percentage plummeting. Plummeting. That's affecting all of our health. We're seeing oxygen content in some of the urban areas as low as 12%. You drop a few more percentage points off that, people are going to start dropping in the streets. We are in truly uncharted territory right here, right now. And people are going about their lives as if nothing is wrong. They're caught up in the political theater on it, whatever side of the fence they're on. I don't care. It doesn't matter. When we look at the wider horizon, clearly those in power are doing everything they can to create the maximum theater with issues that cause maximum polarization and division in the population. That's exactly what they're doing. In the meantime, the house is literally burning down around us.
Well, that burning down house, what will that look like when it reaches critical stages for human survival? How will people start to die?
There's a very big variable in the equation, and that is, what will the power structure do? What cards will they play? And I would argue we are perilously close to that point, already unfolding in many regards. Which cards will they play, and how will that affect the equation? When the power structure starts to drop nuclear bombs, obviously the equation changes radically. If they are able to trigger, or whether the unfolding now released natural processes of feedback loops trigger a supervolcano like the Yellowstone potential event, and that saturates the atmosphere with particulates that change the paradigm of current heating. We've just passed the 401st consecutive month of above normal temperatures, Dave. And we're seeing, you've seen the weather whiplash, Dave, the up and down, right? You've seen the temperatures go from record high to snow in a day in places. You've seen that.
Yes, I've seen it.
So this attempt to temporarily cool things down with patented processes of chemical ice nucleation, these cool downs are engineered events. People need to understand that. So if there's some major nuclear exchange, military operations that alter the equation and completely blot out the sun, that, of course, has ramifications as well. You can't grow anything, and those that live underground in the military bases or so forth may be the only survivors in such a scenario. But short of that, as the food chain breaks down, as the incredibly complex societal structure we've all known disintegrates, and that will happen at blinding speed once links in the chain start dropping out, we would face a scenario, I would argue, Dave, if your listeners have ever seen a movie called The Road. I would recommend they watch that movie if they haven't, and do it sitting down. Because that's a real life scenario of the sort of destination that we are headed to at blinding speed. It's a post-apocalyptic, very real, true to life presentation of what we might face. So it's called The Road. Again, that's the best portrayal I could give without going into a longer rant.
Well, what you're describing is commonly called nuclear winter. And this is what disrupted photosynthesis and caused the food supply to go away. And according to our geologic history, that's what killed the dinosaurs. Do you subscribe to that notion too?
Well, we have with the KT event, paleo data does point to that, but we have different elements in the equation now. We have, again, an atmosphere that is filling with various greenhouse gases, including methane, nitrous oxide, gases that are much, much more powerful than CO2. And Dave, when we talk about methane, what does the media use to polarize people on the methane issue? They talk about cow flatulence and so forth, which makes a lot of people angry because they can't imagine, rightfully so, that could make that big a difference. But it's not that particular part of the equation that matters so much. It's the forests that are cut down to facilitate that livestock. And even bigger, much, much bigger, is the thawing and releasing formerly frozen methane hydrates and clathrates in the not just the polar zones, but other regions. And there's enough – let me put this in mathematical context on the methane issue alone. And this will further answer the question you posed a moment ago. Mathematically speaking, it's thought there's as much as 10,000 gigatons of frozen methane hydrate in the Laptev Sea in the Arctic alone, 10,000 gigatons. If one half of 1% of that released, 50 gigatons, 1/200th, that would increase by about 400% the overall greenhouse gas warming. So if a tiny, tiny fraction of this methane gets into the atmosphere, and we think it's already happened, and it's going to get worse, we have a runaway greenhouse effect, and we appear to be on that track right now. So that tracks sort of the nuclear cataclysm that may temporarily blot out the sun and alter the equation from what you asked me about a moment ago. Short of that, we have Venus syndrome. And your listeners can look that up. They'll find, if they search any of these subjects I'm talking about, Dave, if they search geoengineeringwatch.org, Venus syndrome, geoengineeringwatch.org, methane release, geoengineeringwatch.org, chemical ice nucleation. We have 2,500 articles on our site. They'll find it in any search engine. So it's not hard to find this data to further detail what I'm talking about. But the bottom line is this, under any scenario, we are in a very short time horizon right now in regard to the current paradigm of reality. And at best, we will preserve some of Earth's life support systems, and any chance we have to do that rests, I would argue, completely on stopping the intentional climate intervention so that people understand the severity of what's unfolding, the severity of damage done, and most importantly, Dave, we allow the planet to respond on its own to the damage done, and we stop interfering with these natural processes.
That's a very, very good answer. So I think that back to the term planetary triage, we can save what we can. Do you think mankind's going to be forced to go underground to survive?
If we stay on the current course, they won't survive long there either.
Well, I was wondering about that too, because in your view of this, is this activity that we're seeing with tectonic plate shifts like Yellowstone and the volcanic activity increasing across the planet, is this indicative of a pole shift in a coming ice age?
In regard to the coming ice age narrative, what I would ask people to do again is look at the data. So we have, Dave, you heard people refer to the modern minimum on the ice ages. You've heard that, the solar minimum. You've heard that discussed, right?
Yes.
So let's look at previous effects for previous mini ice ages. What effect of the solar radiance did those events actually have? In the case of the largest documented solar minimum event, it affected 0.25% of the sun's incoming thermal energy, 0.25%, 1/400th of the total. It's statistically completely insignificant. And so these events people point out as you hear people talk about that we're heading into that scenario now, yet we've just passed the 401st consecutive month of above normal temperatures. And what do we see being done with official statistics? They're not being overreported. The temperatures are not being overreported. In fact, in May, Dave, we had 8,600 high temperature records set in the U.S., 8,600. And even then, they are underreporting the high temperatures. When they do a geoengineered cold event, that creates a cold, dense layer of air at the surface. That's why, Dave, you had all the snow in Boston. Remember how the media hyped that? And remember this last year, did you see all the headlines on the record snow in Erie, Pennsylvania?
Yes, absolutely.
A tiny little patch of real estate, where they use the moisture from the Great Lakes to chemically nucleate and create this record and this headline to confuse and divide people. What do we see on the bigger picture? Heat and more heat. So if we look at the downplaying of the statistics, the underreporting of temperatures, we're seeing a 3, 4, 5 degree underreporting of temperatures everywhere we monitor. What does that mean? It means it's far, far worse than we're being told right now. So the inertia behind the current climate collapse, planetary meltdown scenario being made worse by climate engineering, far worse, that's far too much inertia for any known scenario to counteract. For example, Dave, even the day after tomorrow scenario, the thermal hailing shutdown, you're familiar with that?
Explain that, thermal hailing.
The Gulf Stream. If people have seen
The
Day After Tomorrow movie is about the Gulf Stream shutting down, which happened in the Younger Dryas period. Ice dam over North America broke, flooded the North Atlantic, shut down the thermohaline, triggered an ice age. There is no scenario like that or solar minimum that can even begin to slow down the momentum of what we have done to the planet, with climate engineering, again, being at the top of the list. But we have 2,000 nuclear detonations, all of which damage the atmosphere, contaminating everything. I could go on and on and on, but the bottom line is we have been unimaginably poor stewards of the planet. Climate engineering, the greatest single example of insane human endeavors.
Man, let's talk about the Gulf oil explosion, because did that not factor into affecting the Gulf Stream?
It's certainly a part of the equation. But the bigger part of the equation in regard to ocean currents, and this is where we're back to climate engineering as being a core causal factor for the disintegrating biosphere. The single greatest factor affecting ocean currents is climate engineering. Why? Because with all the components of climate engineering I've just outlined, the radio frequency manipulation of the atmosphere and the electrically conductive particulates, that alters upper level wind currents. And the microwave transmissions alone can do this by creating high and low pressure zones. Dave, they spin. Look, picture a fan belt on a car. And you see that fan belt going clockwise around some pulleys, counterclockwise around other pulleys, right? Mm-hmm. You follow me?
Yeah, I got it.
That's exactly what they can do with the upper level wind currents, with high and low pressure zones. In the northern hemisphere, high level winds spin clockwise around high pressure, counterclockwise around low pressure, and just like a fan belt on a car, they can push those upper level winds however they want to achieve whatever goal is on their agenda. In doing so, in altering upper level wind currents, they've altered ocean currents. By altering ocean currents, now what's happening? We have warm water being pumped into polar regions where it should not be, where it's melting ice from below as well as from above. So we have climate engineering, again, with the goal of weather warfare, manipulation of populations, and this is important, hiding the true severity of climate collapse while fueling the process at the same time. So we have these programs that can and are creating short-term, toxic, highly publicized cooldowns that come at the cost, for many reasons, of a worsened overall warming. Does that make sense?
So the cure is worse than the problem.
Exponentially, unimaginably. Climate engineering, the most destructive human endeavor ever launched by the human race.
Man, what a mess we have put ourselves in. But here's what I come back to. The people that are basically in charge of this geoengineering, this climate manipulation, I can't imagine a scenario, a sane scenario, where someone would do this to their own planet in an environment in which they and their children must exist in.
You have to look at their mentality. And this may help many of your listeners. We posted about 13 very short 2 to 3 minute videos answering the most commonly asked questions on climate engineering, top center of the homepage. So that may help, but let me answer it here briefly. You have to look through their lens, and this is how they look through it. They're not about to give up their power. They're not about to give up the current paradigm of trying to acquire more power. So they look at it as a risk-to-risk scenario for their benefit, the risk of doing it versus the risk of not doing it. So this is about retaining power and control. It's not about the greater good. Why don't they consider the consequences, the ultimate consequences to themselves? Because those at the top of the food chain of the power structure never consider the overall consequences, do they, Dave? That's why they build and detonate 2,000 plus nuclear bombs. That's why we have 400 plus nuclear power plants on the planet today, any one of which could be a global extinction event. That may already be the case with Fukushima, but let's add Chernobyl back to the equation, because the sarcophagus at Chernobyl is disintegrating from the radiation. Same with the dome of contained nuclear contamination in the South Pacific that was the remnants of 43-plus massive nuclear detonations. That dome is being submerged by rising seas, deteriorating. That's about to start spewing into the atmosphere again. And yet we're building more nuke plants. Now let me back this into an overall apocalyptic equation. Let's look at just the nuke plants. Geoengineering, greatest single causal factor with destroying the ozone layer. We now have massive amounts of UV radiation hitting the planet, which that by itself also another potential extinction event in the near term. Now, if we get a CME, a coronal mass ejection, solar flare, like the Carrington event in the 1800s, that would shut down grids all over the globe. That would shut down the cooling for nuclear plants. Now we have meltdowns occurring everywhere, dozens, perhaps hundreds of them. Game over. Back to climate engineering for that scenario too, destroying the Earth's natural protection and making us more vulnerable to a CME or solar flare. From so many directions, climate engineering is pounding the nails into our collective coffins. That's a scientific, verifiable frontline fact.
There's not much to be said following that, because I don't see any legitimate way out.
The horizon looks incredibly dark. I do admit that. On the nuke plants alone, people don't understand what a death sentence those were to build. You can't just turn them off. And now they're looking for anywhere, everywhere to bury the radioactive material contaminating everything. And that's short of a meltdown, which, again, is already occurring in Japan with no technology known to fix it. But, again, no matter how high the mountain looks, Dave, the most insurmountable climb can sometimes be accomplished if one focuses on their priorities. They're one foot in front of the other first. And I would argue, although we have many bridges to cross, if you will, and a very long journey ahead, and we are in uncharted territory, must we not start with the biggest hole in the bottom of the boat first? And that hole is climate engineering, without any question at all. Climate engineering is a far too dignified a term. This is weather warfare. This is biological warfare, because these elements are highly toxic, highly bioavailable, synergistically toxic. This is nothing short of a programs fueling near-term planetary omnicide. If we could expose this, again, I would argue, we would galvanize populations all over the globe in a common cause of trying to avert near-term total planetary extinction. That's how severe this road is. And I don't want people to believe me. I'm asking them to investigate everything I'm saying. I'm pleading with them. And people shouldn't underestimate how much power they have in the equation, Dave. They all do. If we would simply not be deterred by those around us who don't want to hear the truth, because they will be forced to face the truth soon, like it or not, if we share credible data with them, we plant a seed that will be forced to sprout soon. If we all did that, we would reach a critical mass of awareness. If we can reach a critical mass of awareness, we can wake up military families, thus their military member. And there's a lot of good people in the military, Dave, as I know you know. I'm communicating with 3 Air Force major generals now, 3, 1 very high ranking, and they're trying to help. They're exceptional human beings, did not know this was going on. They know they've been lied to. They know that this is a very hard thing to face for a military member of that rank, that their entire career was dedicated to something that may cost the future for their children. But they are facing that fact. If we can wake up the U.S. military and get enough of them on our side, we could stop these programs from the inside out.
How does the movement of technocracy and moving everyone into a smart grid, how does that play into this scenario?
We're not going to get that far. When people talk about various agendas, Agenda 2030 and so forth, whatever plans the power structure has, I don't deny they have those plans. We are not going to get that far without hitting the wall at full velocity. And that means the whole paradigm goes upside down. As soon as nobody can help anybody else, it's going to be chaos. The law of the jungle will ensue. Power structure, if they're still functional and if they still have a military that's willing to serve them, will play unimaginable cards at that point. And I would argue they're preparing for that. Back to 5G, which has the potential to render populations virtually helpless. So I would argue they're absolutely preparing for that. Why did they buy? Why did U.S. agencies like Homeland Security purchase 2.4 billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point? Why? I think we know why. They are absolutely preparing. So again, people need to understand the scenarios I'm describing are not somewhere far off on the horizon. They're unfolding right now. Preparations are being made right now. And if people, Dave, if I can get philosophical for a moment, if people would consider that we should do the right thing, we should make every effort to try to preserve some sort of future for our children and their posterity, because it's the right thing to do, not because we're guaranteed a satisfactory result. That's not true courage. That's not true love or dedication to our children. We must try, because it's incumbent upon us to try. It's our obligation. People need to reprioritize. Why are we here? Are we here to fight for the greater good or to pursue our personal pleasures until there's nothing left? We need to ask ourselves, which is it?
It's a very stunning question. If this nightmare scenario is allowed to carry itself out, it comes to fruition and goes full cycle, will there be human survivors?
Absolutely no. Absolutely not. And this is in the very near term horizon. I'm not talking about centuries away. Right now, statistically, we are likely past the whole climate conference scenario, Dave. All of them are complete shams. They're designed to provide smoke and mirror cover for the advancement of the geoengineering insanity I talked about. Statistically, we are likely past 3.5 degrees C of warming right now on the planet. That's above the baseline at which humans existed, and it's accelerating. So the bottom line is, mathematically speaking, on the current path, I want to stress that, on the current path, if we remain on this path, mathematically, statistically, we have no chance, even in the near-term horizon.
You know, when
we
I
have
hear,
to change course. Change course, and maybe we might have some potential to salvage something, and that's worth fighting for.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go next, exactly, because we have given the audience in the course of this interview a lot to digest, and I know that many of them are going to need to take this in smaller bits. I've got a lot of familiarity with your work, and I'm being pushed to keep up with this. So I want to give people a chance to follow your good work so they can come up to speed, at a speed that's a little more comfortable. So what would you tell them? What should they do? Go to your website and watch the videos first? What would you recommend?
I would start with the answers to the most commonly asked questions on climate engineering. Who's doing it? Why are they doing it? Why would they do this themselves? What are the human health effects? There's the most fundamental questions are answered there. Then I would proceed to some of the presentations that are there, PowerPoint presentations. There's a Hacking the Planet, a short 45-minute video we did of which some of those questions were answered on. And I understand how hard it is to have our reality blown apart and to have to face this. But if we don't face it, too many people have pulled punches for too long. That's why we're in this dark place. We have to face reality head on now, or we won't have tomorrow.
I hear that warning loud and clear. Unfortunately, we are out of time, so would you give out your website address, please?
Geoengineeringwatch.org. There are essential informational materials there that can be shared free with links we have there from your own home computer. Help us to sound the alarm with credible data. That's how we wake others up.
Exactly. Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Dane Wigington, a very sobering account of where we're at with the planet. I want to thank all of you for joining us this evening. We wish all of you a great week. God bless. We'll see you back here again, hopefully, next week.